The following is a presentation of Project Independence and WCWP. Project Independence is the Aging in Place initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. We provide programs and services designed to assist and support the older town residents who wish to remain in their homes as they age. If we don't currently provide a service, we will try and connect you to that service. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services.
Welcome to Project Independence and you.
Welcome to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and You. I'm your host, John Ryan. My co-host today is Iris Bunshaft, and it's always a pleasure when Iris is around.
Always glad to be with you, John.
And actually, we're going to go right to our first guest, who is Dr. Justine Lockman. And Dr. Lockman is Director of Congestive Heart Failure, the department at NYU Winthrop, And just prior to the show, you were starting to tell us information, and I didn't say anything because you're going to have to repeat it all. So what I like to start off with is, what made you decide to be a doctor, and how did you get there?
Oh, thank you. I hope to inspire individuals. Always try to go to my children's schools and talk about my story. My uncle was a surgeon, and he used to bring me to work with him, and my mother was a psychologist.
She
used to bring me to work with her.
Okay.
So I was always in the medical field, and at the age of 12, I read the book, The Death of Ivan Illovich, and I was fascinated how this book brought together the philosophy of the mind and the body, because the main character essentially programmed his own demise through symptoms that he was having. It was an interesting
real symptoms
book.
Or no? Well, he made them up.
Well, no,
they were
having
real. Okay,
symptoms.
Okay,
yes,
he was having.
Yes.
I thought it was a psychological thing. Okay.
Yes, but it was an inspiring book.
Okay.
And I loved to read growing up, and we were just talking about my background in cardiac transplantation, and there was a Time magazine article with DeBakey, and he was holding an artificial heart, and I thought I was very inspired by the fact that there could be something that could replace something so human. This is Valentine's Day. We're surrounded by hearts in front of us. And the heart is a metaphor, but it's also something that not only gives us love and pleasure, but it keeps us alive. So I was just fascinated by this artificial heart being able to keep you alive. I joined an ambulance corps when I was 15 in my local neighborhood, and I witnessed somebody be revived. And again, that just reinforced the metaphysical aspect of the heart and how it really controls your life and
that's amazing.
Your being.
I always love to hear when, you know, it's not like, oh, I had nothing better to do and I have good grades, so I became a doctor. To do something like this, it's a calling, which is wonderful.
And there were little pieces in my life all along that seemed to fall into place and really guided me towards being a cardiologist, not only a physician.
Okay. What is congestive heart failure?
I think that's a wonderful question to start off with.
Okay.
And if we rewind back to the meaning of the heart,
okay, absolutely.
The heart is the engine of the body. As the engine of the body, it provides blood flow to our brains, our essential organs, our muscles, our lungs. It moves the blood along so that any of the byproducts of digestion can be brought to your intestines. Any byproducts of carbon dioxide can be brought to the lungs, and of course it brings the essential nutrients and oxygen to the brain. Congestive heart failure is a syndrome where the sequence of the output of the heart is somewhat disrupted. Either you've had a heart attack, you've had high blood pressure, there's an insult along the way to the cardiac muscle, and because of that insult, it's affected the output. So essentially, the engine is not producing the correct output to provide the organs the output they need.
Okay.
So typically, the symptoms can be quite variable. They can lead anything from shortness of breath, the inability to walk, weakness, weight loss from the decrease in blood flow to the intestines. You can lose your appetite. And as I was mentioning before, we're nothing but animals and we're meant to survive. So we have reflexes. So that reflex to survive is we start retaining water because we may believe we may not have access to water. So they start getting water in the legs, water in collection in the lungs, and ergo the shortness of breath symptoms.
Is that because of leakage? What do you mean, that the necessity to retain water? Or just as a life life-sustaining thing? Is that what the body is, what you're saying is doing?
You have certain processes, reflexes that keep, like the thirsty, when we grab for water, we have a reflex. If the pressure is low in our blood vessels, we have receptors that tell us to drink. So when the pressure is low or the flow is low, we have this reflex to drink and retain water. Mm-hmm. Also our diets, if we're eating diets high in salt, the water follows salt. So if you're eating processed foods, mm-hmm. which are high in sodium, which is a preservative, the sequence is that you subsequently start retaining water.
Wow.
So, and of course, water is dead weight. If you've ever picked up a gallon of water, it's heavy. So once patients start retaining water in the legs or in the lungs, it's like walking around with a gallon of water in each leg. So you get short of breath, you get tired very easily, fatigued, your extremities are cold because it...
And how is that treated?
We're very fortunate to be in this time where we have medications that help us. Through medications, we reduce the reflex to retain water through a medication called an ACE inhibitor or an angiotensin receptor blocker. If we're retaining too much water, then we're also given a diuretic or a water pill. This results in immobilization of water out of the blood vessel in the kidney and the production of an increase in urine output.
So in other words, when you treat, but you must treat the heart with other medication in addition to that.
I think to rewind, we need to treat the underlying cause first. So number one, one of the most common causes is high blood pressure. So if your blood pressure is high, it causes the heart to work harder. As the heart works harder and it has to push up against the high pressure, it becomes more muscular. A good analogy to this is if you've ever tried to open a door with wind on the other side, it's tough to do. So if your blood pressure is 120 millimeters of mercury, then it's easy for the heart to push open the aortic valve and to push forward the blood flow. If the pressure is higher, 120, 140, 150, 160, the higher the pressure, the more the heart has to work harder to push the blood out and push your cardiac output forward. And as it's working harder, it's becoming more muscular. As the heart's becoming more muscular, in and of itself requires more blood, and it requires differences in filling and contraction. So that's something that we call preserved heart failure, where the pumping function remains normal. Typically, the heart pumps at 55% of its output, and with preserved ejection fraction, that systolic function is preserved, but the filling is disrupted because the heart is thicker. It's like having a styrofoam cup, and the edges are thicker, mm-hmm. so you could less fluid goes in. So the same principle, less cardiac input is in the heart, so less output is reduced.
So that medication alone is not enough to reduce the buildup of the fluids in the body?
Well, I think just rewinding, we need to control the blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be on medications that control our blood pressure. Patients need to monitor their own blood pressure, monitor their diet. Typically, each medication will lower blood pressure by about 10 millimeters, 10 points. Diet and exercise will lower the blood pressure each by 10 points. So according to the American Heart Association guidelines, exercising half an hour to 40 minutes per day and per week reduces the blood pressure. Having a healthy diet, something called the DASH diet, is the most beneficial. A diet in healthy fruits and vegetables, avoiding sodium. Salt will water will follow salt. So again, just controlling the risk factors for heart disease.
Just kind of interrupt you, what is DASH?
The DASH, it's a diet that is high in fruits and vegetables that's recommended by the American Heart Association.
Okay.
Dr. Lockman, fruits and vegetables, particular, let's just say carrots, for instance, has its own salt. Is that...
Typically,
is that
the naturally the naturally occurring fruits and vegetables mm-hmm. Will have some sodium. And then what we need to do is a little math. We get to have 1,500 milligrams of sodium per day. So a slice of bread will have 150 milligrams. A cup of milk will have 150 milligrams. A Chinese food entree will have 3,000 milligrams. Mm. So we need to, it's very good to have your fruits and vegetables, but when you look at the label, the FDA has provided us with percentages of sodium in our foods. So typically, on the average, you can eat something that has about 200 milligrams of sodium in, which is a natural occurring element. It's when we start having processed foods that when we're getting high boluses or high introductions of sodium into our diet.
I think that's the big thing today. I mean, there's so much processed food, as you say, the Chinese food and stuff that you throw in the microwave oven, which is probably 2,000 and 3,000 per meal.
Correct.
Versus, yeah, fruits and vegetables have something. But my gut feeling is it's a natural source of something.
Correct.
So, you know,
that's you acceptable. Can't correct it. You have to eat something in
natural
foods, yes.
Correct. And sodium is a natural preservative.
And you need salt in your body as well.
When we check your blood levels, we check your sodium levels, we check your potassium levels, as well as your kidney function. Mm-hmm. So all of these are important factors that we take into consideration. And I think just as you mentioned, we are eating a lot of processed food, and it's quite simple to be more natural.
Right.
Because we're nothing but cavemen, so we should eat what cavemen ate. Nuts, berries.
You have reduced us.
But it's the truth. At the end of the day, that's what a diet should be.
Yes.
You know, I mean, the population today, and you see it, it's just the newest processed something or other. And unfortunately, we're starting that with children.
Correct.
At a very young age, you just pop it in the microwave, send them off to school with something that's pre-packed, which has to have oodles of salt as preservatives.
Correct.
You and know, sugar. So. And
yeah,
fats
and sugar. That's
probably,
true. Well, sugar.
Maybe even,
yeah.
I've forgotten the name of the other fats.
Like a saturated.
Saturated.
Unsaturated. Right.
So you want to eat the healthy fats
right.
like avocado, nuts. Mm-hmm. So those are the healthy fats.
Can we turn to arrhythmias? I hear more and more people have arrhythmias, but that's a broad topic.
Correct. So again, if we're rewinding back to the causes of heart failure, hypertension, a poorly controlled hypertension, coronary artery disease, a little further down is arrhythmias. So if your heart is beating too fast or irregular, so the heart is has a pacemaker, a natural pacemaker, which makes it beat regularly. But as the heart stretches from too much volume, too much pressure, you can have the heart beating irregularly, something called atrial fibrillation. And if that starts occurring, that's affecting the regulated blood flow in the heart. There's a perfect sequence of blood flow from the venous side through the right atrium, through the right ventricle, into the lungs, and then to the left side of the heart. And it's almost like a football game. So you need a quarterback. You need to have a perfect passing of the blood flow. And if you have an arrhythmia, you have an illogical sequence of blood flow because one part of the heart may be maybe contracting or moving the blood flow when the other side isn't ready. And then the blood winds up going, the flow isn't as precise as it should be.
Mm-hmm. Does that also cause leakage because of the pressure?
Correct. You're absolutely correct. We're introducing the word pressure quite frequently into this conversation. And I think that's something that we need to define. We have a blood pressure. Typically, your doctor will throw a number at you of 120 over 80, or you'll read that. So we're familiar with that. But the venous side of the body has a pressure, too. And it's very low.
Venous, you mean veins?
Yes. And that's typically where most of this leakage occurs. The vein should be a low pressure system, but once you start backing up or getting congested, there's leaking of blood out of the vessel. And once that that leakage occurs, you start getting water accumulation in different different compartments of your body.
Not because of these tears.
It's not as much as a tear. It's more of an osmotic kind of diffusion of water.
Okay.
It's a pressure, you're correct there, but it's not a tear. A tear would be on the perhaps an arterial in a different topic of conversation, but it's more of a leaking of flow of out of the blood vessel, which is why compression stockings are very good for counteracting the blood flow, the pressure on the coming out. The compression stockings will push the pressure back in and keep the blood, they'll keep the fluid inside the blood vessel. So,
perfect. Actually, we're going to take a break. Okay, we're listening here this morning with Dr. Lachman, and we'll be right back. You're listening to 88.1 FM and WCWP.org.